Okay, while this is keying up, how many of you, by show of hands, have participated in the code or standards development at a state or local level? Can I see your hands? Okay. And was that participating in committees or testifying on behalf of an ASHRAE chapter or your own individual corporation? Can I see hands on, if it was the ASHRAE chapter? Okay, well, that's good. Okay, good. Because I cover the Southwest, and in the Southwest we have six states, and we also include Wyoming, which is kind of funny that we include Wyoming in the Southwest, but we grabbed Wyoming. So here's the AIA learning objectives on what I'm going to talk about. And I'm really going to talk about the code development process in the states and the local areas. And this really is relevant to Lewis and Isaac and what Carolyn's going to talk about in their territories. So on the history of codes and standards, the Model Energy Codes came about in the 1970s. I think we're all aware of that with the oil embargo of the 70s. And the standard 90 came about in the mid-70s. And then EPACT came along in the late 70s that had requirements for buildings. So we had the 90-75 energy conservation and new buildings that was in place for a number of years. And as you know now, we've got the three-year cycle. We have the three-year cycle on the I-codes, the international codes, and we have the three-year cycle on the ASHRAE standards. And so this is a great book to have. This is a combined book. You can pick it up at the bookstore, ASHRAE Online, ICC's bookstore also. But it has the 2012 IECC, and it has the 90.1 2010 standard. So it's a great book to have. It's the most affordable way to get a hold of the standard and the code. This is where the commercial codes look as of December 1st. So darker colors is 90.1 2007 or equivalent. As you're aware, that the newer codes and standards are just becoming adopted. I think Maryland is the first state to adopt the IECC with reference to 90.1. And then there's localities that are starting to adopt the 2012. In Colorado, where I'm based out of, SWEEP is based out of Boulder, Colorado. We have Douglas County, which is a large county in the Denver metro area, that's rolling over to the 2012 IECC and 90.1 2010 within the next month. So that'll be our first taste of the newer standard and code in Colorado. So how are they adopted? We've got 3 years, and at the state, and so we're talking, I think more so I'm talking about the energy code piece, because that's what code officials are familiar with. They understand there's a standard, there's a reference to the standard in the energy code. So the codes and standards, three-year cycle. Yeah, on the codes, the state and local code officials vote. It's a governmental process, different than the NC process here at ASHRAE. And anyone can participate and provide code changes and proposals and can testify for on behalf throughout that code change cycle. That's very similar at the local level, and we'll show that. And then on ASHRAE, we've got a 50-member standing committee on 90.1, and I was not able to attend those committee meetings this year, but I believe it was three days this year, and I think that's typical. And then final model codes are published and sold to state and local governments and individuals like you and me. So the 90.1 development process looks like that. It's a continuous revision, as you're aware, with ASHRAE standards. It's different for the codes, I-codes, and it's different at the local level, too. So as an ongoing or a continuous maintenance process, it goes through the committees. It's reviewed, it's approved, and addendum are created. Unlike the codes, where it's a circle, and it's a three-year time frame, and code changes are proposed, they're reviewed, they go to a development hearing. There's a committee that listens to those, makes a decision, and then it goes through a final development review. And at that time, the floor, the government officials can overrule the committee's decision at the I code development process. And then a new code, once it's defined at the final action hearings on the left part of the circle, then a new version is published, and then the process starts again. So on the I codes, proposals have already been submitted for a number of I codes, not the energy code, but the IBC, I'm not sure if the fire code. So there's a number of codes where proposals have already been submitted. They'll be heard, I believe those are heard next year. And so what I'm showing is this tends to be the process at the state and local level. It's a process. It may not take a year. It may be a three-month cycle. It may be shorter depending upon the size of the jurisdiction. But it tends to be in this format where proposals are submitted, they're heard, they're approved, and then once it's implemented, then you have another 3 years or whenever the community decides to adopt another code. They typically have a three-year cycle also that follows subsequent to the I code release. So what we see at the state and local level, and this is why it's important, we need your technical expertise. We need you to participate. In Colorado, we contact the Rocky Mountain chapter and get their assistance at the state and local level. And within my territory, my region, we have home rule states, so they don't have state codes. There's not a state code in Wyoming. We have a quasi-state energy code in Colorado, and there's no energy code in Arizona. They're home rule states, and so each jurisdiction adopts their own codes, and so they could be at different levels. They can be at an 06 IECC, referencing a 90.1 2004, or they could be at a 2009 IECC, referencing a 90.1 2007. So, but it's very similar to that circle that I just showed. So the code changes are submitted. They typically start at the building official. The building department submits code changes, and then there's a development process, and they usually post a notice, typically on the localities, the city's website or the county's, and announce there's a development hearing, and that's where industry then can come in and have discussions, and that's a great time for industry to go and talk to the code officials and let them understand. And especially if it's a product and they're not understanding it, and you have that ability to educate them, invite them out to your facility. That's great for them to be educated. So there's the development meetings. Could be multiple. It depends on the size of the jurisdiction. And then the results are posted, again, on the municipality website. And then there's a finalization meeting. So these steps occur in about a two-month cycle. They don't go on for the year plus that we see at the I codes. And again, they're not an ongoing maintenance. So public comments are posted. Then the city council, the county commission sees that's another opportunity for technical expertise to go talk to those we'll call them legislators, those local leaders, and to let them understand, because this is where a building code official may decide that we want this code and standard, and I need somebody with an expertise that can come and convert it into layman's terms and share it at the local level so they understand. There also, the other question is cost and cost effectiveness. What is it going to cost? That tends to be a big question too. And then today, it's economics. Will a new code and standard drive economics? Will it drive jobs? So that's very important too. So this slide, Isaac's going to cover that. we coordinated on our presentation. So cost and energy savings, as I mentioned, this is important. On the residential level, that's one of the biggest, don't want to say challenges. It's a challenge. It's one of the biggest discussion points at the residential level. First, cost. Is it going to cost $2,000 more per new home to build to the 2012 IECC, or $20,000 more? And so first cost is important. And then who can provide the valid numbers? Where are these valid numbers coming from? We all do analysis and evaluations, and we come up with cost numbers. We work with PNL, Pacific Northwest National Labs, and look for their numbers. And then there's other organizations we work with on the residential side. Same thing can occur on the commercial side of cost, first cost, for building a newer, more efficient building. And then, of course, the energy savings. I always like to say, well, what's the return on granite countertops? I know what the return is on a higher efficiency boiler or furnace or insulation or lower air infiltration rates, but I can't show a return on granite countertops or wood floors or things like that. So this is just an example from residential. NREL worked on this and showing that it costs more, but if you look at it over a typical 30-year loan, and that's what we see residentially, here's your additional costs because your mortgage goes up, and here's your savings, energy savings, and here's your net annual savings, and that's what you see on the bottom. So that's what we tend to do on residential. Same thing on commercial, if that comes up, but it tends not to come up as much on commercial as it does on residential. What's the first cost? How's that going to impact the construction of new buildings? What's that going to impact on the leasing costs of the building? The other things that you can participate in as distributors, suppliers, or have those relationships is, are the products available? Are the materials available? As new codes and standards come in, can we get these more efficient pumps? Can we get these more efficient windows? And insulation, duct insulation, that was a big thing for many years. Can you get an R8 duct insulation? So are the materials available? That's very important. And then the technical experts, as I mentioned earlier. You're experts. You know your industry that you work in. And we invite you to get with the local regional alliance that's in your area. And we'd like to connect with you and have your expertise. And we can lead you. We can help you on where you can... when you can participate, when you can testify, what meetings are coming up. And then training needs, that's another one. Lewis touched on that. Training is important. Once a new code and standard comes into play, then they need to be, they being industry, code officials, building inspectors, need to be trained to understand what are the requirements of that new standard, what are the requirements of the new code, and how will that impact them. And then they can then start to offer training with that in their local jurisdiction or at the state level. So that's an important one. And currently there's all kinds of trainings going on. ICC chapters have trainings. I know ASHRAE chapters also, HBAs, BOMA, and realtor trainings. Those are opportunities. And the other thing that I wanted to touch on technical is implementation. Once the code and standard is adopted, is how do we adopt this? How do we get to the point where we can start to enforce the new code and standard? And one of the things that I'm working on in the Southwest is implementation plans. So we don't want to drop a code and standard on a building department's or trade's lap and say, on this day you start enforcing this code and standard. When we look at a 2012 IECC or we look at a 90.1 2010 and they were on the 90.1 2004, that's a big jump. There's a lot of education and opportunity. So what we're working on is implementation plans. You start to phase in the requirements as the codes after the code and standards are adopted. So if we know there's a more challenging item that needs to be inspected, and install load counts. If that's not happening, then let's implement a training schedule and start to phase in the requirements. So in 18 months and 12 months that we are now enforcing the codes and standards for load calculations or allowing the industry. And I talked about materials. So if we don't have R8 to insulate our ducts, then let's take 6 months. Let's take what time it takes to allow that product to get into the market. And so that's where you can also participate. And that is my presentation. And we'll wait for questions at the end.